The average professional golfer earns $2 million in winnings on the PGA Tour. So how did Jordan Spieth, in an off year, make around $32 million in 2019 when he was 51st on the money list? Let's figure it out. This is The Business of Golf. Welcome into The Business of Golf, where we're discussing how money is made and spent in the golf industry. I'm Allison Johnson, here with my co-host, Adam Grubb. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Allison. Good to see you.
So what do you think? Did you ever have a job that not only welcomed moonlighting, but actually expected it?
No. That is not known to me. Typically, when you have a job, you are supposed to do that job, and you are not to to go outside of that realm. But for golfers, that's expected.
It's a little different on the PGA Tour. So we're going to talk with friend Barry Hyde today. He's a golf industry powerhouse. If you're in the industry, you know him as the Manatee. If you don't know him, you will, and you will love him. Barry is joining us. He is the EVP of Brands and Properties at Wasserman, where he has got his fingerprints on all things golf, properties, people, tournaments, events. And he's got a really distinguished background in the sports marketing industry. He comes from the PGA Tour. He's had his hands all over some of the greatest known activations at MasterCard as the VP of sponsorship. And he was the first ever CMO at the USGA, where he was responsible for the organization's first corporate partnerships. So he is the perfect person to walk us through how these golfers are getting sponsorships, what it looks like, and what they're doing to keep them. So Barry, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thanks, Allison. Nice to meet you, Adam. This is exciting. I feel better about myself after that introduction.
That's our goal, Barry. That's our goal. That's why we do the bios at the front side of this thing.
Very, very, very nice.
So Barry, tell us, what's the deal with all the extra deals? How are these sponsorships of athletes actually happening?
Well, I mean, in the golf world, I think golf's got a very special distinction in that golf is the sport of business, and it's a participatory sport in a way that it can be used in business, and brands don't miss that. I mean, it's not surprising to have endemic companies involved in bowling, if you make bowling balls, or in golf or baseball or anything else. But where golf gets exciting and lucrative for the athletes, that happens in golf because they know that it's a good way to communicate on a business to business basis. And that's why when you look at golfers, the brands you'll see are often insurance companies, banks, and consumer brands, yes, but also brands that they want to communicate with business decision makers. And from my earliest days at the PGA Tour in the late 80s, through my years at MasterCard and the USGA, and now on the agency side, that hasn't changed. The demand for PGA Tour athletes and LPGA players has been pretty consistent and continued to grow.
The history of sponsorships in golf dates back into the 1960s, but it just seems like over the last 20 years, around the time of Tiger's emergence, that brands really started paying big, big money for sponsorships, not just of golf, but of individual golfers. How have you seen the industry change just in a few short 20 years?
Well, one of the things is you learn is that a lot of people think that golf sponsorship really started with the handshake agreement between Mark McCormack, the legendary founder of IMG, and really the person that if I were to sit down and say who do I owe my career to would be at the top of that list. But when I started at the USGA, I was a little bit, kind of like Darth Vader. I wasn't exactly welcomed into the USGA family, as everybody knew that I was there to bring sponsorship into the organization. And, you know, they claimed that, you know, they had never had sponsors. So I was tipped off by Rand Jarrus, who at the time was the curator of the USGA's museum, that I might look through the collection and find some examples of sponsorship dating back to the turn of the century and, you know, into the 20s. And sure enough, I found programs, even the actual competitor's scorecard. 1 year was in the shape of the Texaco, the ticket. The daily ticket was in the shape of the Texaco star. So sponsorship was happening, you know, as far back as the founding of the USGA. It just wasn't known as sponsorship and wasn't appreciated as much as it is now as a marketing discipline. Then I think brands just did it because it made sense. They didn't try to measure it. They just knew intuitively that it was working because they were doing it and their businesses were growing. So it wasn't rocket science. So I think sponsorship's always been there. And I think the way it's changed most in recent years is really on the media side. Donna Orender, who when I started, I'll give you all these, I feel like Abe Lincoln or something here. But when I first started at the tour in the late 1980s, Donna Orender had a great quote. You know, she said that baseball was really perfect, for radio, and the NFL was perfect for the advent of television. And golf will really grow a lot as new media emerges. And certainly that's happened. You know, as now you can follow individual groups. You can create your own leaderboards. I mean, golf has really lent itself well to the modern consumer of modern media.
So talk us through a little bit about some of the more successful athlete sponsorships that you see out there and tell us a little bit why you think those are so successful.
Yeah. I mean, I like to find relationships that are authentic. Really kind of do your research and figuring out where a good match is between an athlete and a company. One that occurs to me is Stacey Lewis and KPMG. Stacey Lewis went to the University of Arkansas. She's not a client of mine. I'm promoting somebody else's company without knowing it. Somebody did their research there and realized that she had majored in accounting and that she could talk about accounting. And recruited her early on in her career before many of her victories. So I think that's what you want to do. You want to find relationships that really make sense. If you're an emerging kind of edgy brand like G4 or Grayson, you want to find athletes that have an appreciation for fashion. If you're IBM and you're writing, you want to talk to people about technology and the cloud and things like that, find the athletes that have an interest in it and can really participate and understand what you're trying to do, and that's the way you make these things work. There was a company called Paychex, which was revolutionary at its time in the 80s, it was one of the first companies to aggregate payrolls for companies. And they had a sponsorship deal with Jeff Sluman. And they credited it with, almost all their growth and exposure to medium and large size companies. So, golf can be an incredibly efficient way to communicate. So you can find great examples, through time in almost any category. Another example would be Hale Irwin represented Kapalua for 20-something years. So he's representing a property. And why was that authentic? Well, because he was already going there on vacations. He liked Kapalua. So they didn't go out looking for somebody that might make sense. You know, they found somebody that had an authentic appreciation for the property.
And those athletes, Barry, those were really the kind of the first influencers as we know them today. Those athletes or people that tout a product or talk about it. But it's a long road to get somebody signed up and have them involved in a brand. It isn't as simple as, hey, here's money, put our logo on your shirt and have a good day. There's a lot of steps that go into that process, but then there's a lot of things that happen afterwards. It's not just on the course that these athletes have to be a part of with these, not have to, but they're requested to be part of the sponsorship. Walk us through a little bit about that and how that process even works.
Well, that process really starts with getting to know your talent clients. You know, for instance, I represent Gil Hance, the golf course architect, and golf is unique too, and many of the talents around golf aren't necessarily all the players. You have architects, even club professionals, broadcasters that are talent as well. But sticking to players for the moment, you need to understand what their objectives are and what their comfort level is with doing certain things. If they don't want to do a lot of corporate stuff, if they don't want to learn about the companies, if they don't have a natural interest in it, then you might push them towards a comprehensive clothing deal from head to toe with an Under Armour or a Nike, where there's not going to be space for a lot of logos or other integration. And then you have to keep watching it too, because people change. You know, just in the 15, 20 years that I've worked with Tom Watson, as he's gone from, he won at 48 years old at Colonial. Now he's in his early 70s. His comfort level with the corporate community and his comfort with speaking at events has grown. So the athletes evolve. You know, what they might be interested in at 18 could be different than what they're interested in at 22. So you got to do your homework. You know, it's not. You're not throwing stuff up against the wall. You're not just trying to sell deals, willy-nilly. You're trying to learn about the brands, and you're trying to learn about the athletes, and hopefully coming up with the right combinations. It's not always gonna be a perfect match. When that happens, you work a little harder and you try to make it up to both the talent and the brand. And find something that works better.
So if I'm a brand, say that I own a yogurt company and it's Greek yogurt, I'm just launching, I'm really excited, I've got my social channels ready to go, but I find someone, I happen to spot a player eating my brand of yogurt. I'm not going to be able to Google them and get their phone number and reach out to them. What's the best way for brands? What do they do next once they decide that's authentic to my brand? It's the right characteristics. I like how they present themselves. Then what happens?
Well, usually the brands do have, if not a sports marketing agency, they have an advertising agency. My biggest customers aren't necessarily brands directly. My biggest customers are, in some cases, my competitors. You know, I work for Wasserman. I work very closely with CAA on Mitsubishi Electric, Farmers, and some of their things. So these brands, that CEO of the yogurt company, will usually contact his or her internal head of marketing, who will contact an agency. And once you get into the agency culture, you know, they know how to make those, those contacts. And that's how it works. And that's actually a real, goes back a bit, but that's actually a real example too. We were contacted by a yogurt brand. They saw our client at the time, she's since retired, Suzanne Pedersen. You know, loved her Chobani yogurt, and you know, they did contact us. So, you look for all those authentic things. You try to figure out what people do, and find things not only for the big clients. You know, it's not that hard to get a deal for Victor Hovland or Ricky Fowler or all that, but you really got to search and work harder to get a deal for Mark Wilson or for DA Points. And you find out that DA Points really knows a lot about wine, likes to talk about wine. And, you know, you find some companies perhaps in that space, which overlaps well with the golf lifestyle. And you try to find some relationships that make sense. You know, you don't need an MBA for this.
Yeah, let's talk about the particular guys that you mentioned a second ago, these top superstars. They're always the ones that are talked about making the most money after they play golf, or that they make more money in endorsements than they do actually winning tournaments because they are superstars and whatnot. But it's those other players that are coming up that are trying to make a living in golf that need those sponsorships, need those partnerships, and need that financial backing from companies more than ever. Do you see that relationship sometimes more fruitful for brands than the top guys?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly can be. If again, not a client of mine, so again, I'm promoting a competitor of mine. But you know, there's the guy that does the consulting for Cisco. Does what I do, but does it for Cisco. He's with Octagon. His name is Scott Seymour. He went out and basically, you know, created a team of golfers for the Cisco brand, you know, some of which were established stars and some of which Scott and Cisco think will be stars. So, there's a lot of benefit to growing with, growing with a player, for a brand to grow with the player. It shows loyalty. The player becomes much more comfortable with outings and the things that the brand does. They learn more when it comes time for renewal. The athletes know, and the agents know, hey, this brand was here before I ever won. You know, I'm comfortable with them. They were loyal to me, and I'm going to show some loyalty. That definitely exists.
So, Barry, one of the things that I'm seeing that gets me personally really excited about the growth of the game as a whole is there are a lot of sponsors that have been activating on the men's side that are now switching over and really showing an interest both in the LPGA and the Symetra Tour. Cognizant being a really big new deal that's come on the scene with the $3 million purse here in New Jersey where we are, which is exciting, with the Founders Cup. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing with the trends of these sponsors putting some more money and more effort behind the women.
Yeah. Well, this is an example of where golf as a participatory sport was really ahead of golf as a consumed media or even as a professional sport. I think, you know, 20 years ago, Allison, back when you were running marketing for the PGA Championship, Baltus Rahl, and I was, still at MasterCard, you know, it was still a novelty then to have you know, five or six women in a 120-person corporate shotgun. Now it's not. Now you might have 25 women in an outing for 120 people. So golf as a participatory sport has gotten much more, diverse, so that's been great. Now there was a gap between that and what companies were doing. There's some leaders out there, MasterCard, RBC. It seems have always had teams of golfers that represent them, both male and female. But brands that are just coming into it now know that it's their responsibility to have female athletes, to have male athletes, to support golf, at the grassroots level, to support youth on course and the first tee. I really think that companies see themselves as really supporting the game as a whole, and not just supporting the PGA Tour anymore. And the tour's, you know, done a nice job of helping, you know, in that effort, certainly from a diversity standpoint. So I'm really happy to see that trend. I was happy to see that Cognizant announcement, and I'm happy to see, you know, some of the bigger brands like KPMG and others. I'm happy to see them supporting the game. And I'm also happy to see the LPGA and the USGA and the RNA taking women's championships to golf courses that we want to see on TV. It was an absolute pleasure to watch Popoff win at Royal Troon. To me, that showed great respect.
Well, it's certainly an exciting time for the industry. And I think what we're seeing is for every dollar spent in sponsoring these professional athletes, there are millions of dollars being made throughout the industry because of those relationships, whether it's the end user level, people getting more excited about golf and playing, people engaging with the brands that they're seeing as sponsors. And so it's just a really exciting time altogether.
That is an exciting time. And I'm in the beginning of the back nine anyway in my golf career, and I'm thrilled with where the game is, you know, both professionally, the emerging media, and from a participatory standpoint, it's just going gangbusters. It's really exciting.
Well, thank you, Barry. Appreciate your time. It was a pleasure talking to you, and continued success in your career.
Thanks. Thanks, Adam. Thanks, AJ.
Thanks so Bye. Much.
All right, so Barry obviously has a story career, and he's been involved in a lot of different things, and his career has taken him so many places. What, knowing him, was anything there surprising to you hearing some of his answers, or is that basically the way he's thought and been forever?
Barry has a really good perspective on the industry. One of the things that, and he's always been somewhat of a mentor to me and someone that I really listen to when they speak because he knows what he's talking about. One of the things that I've always found fascinating about how he works through the industry is that he has very solid relationships across the industry, which we all do. And I think it's very similar to the playing side of golf, right? A lot of what people love about golf is the culture and the lifestyle and the people that they meet along the way. But Barry does a lot of deals. Scott Seymour, that he mentioned, is another brilliant sports marketer at Octagon, as he had mentioned. And, you know, I know that they've worked together throughout their whole career. And that doesn't happen, I don't think, in a lot of other industries where you go to your competitor and work together to create a greater good. And part of that is because we all feel so passionately about the sport and about playing and about the opportunity of business throughout the industry.
Yeah, it was fascinating to me to hear, though, how simple he made the deal sound. And you've got a business manager, you've got an accountant, you've got a sports manager, you've got the agency, you've got the brand. It doesn't sound simple to someone who isn't in it. It sounds like there would be a lot that has to happen. But he made it sound very simple, like, yeah, someone's going to see you, they're going to call you, and then we'll just make the deal happen.
Well, and I think the important part that he pointed out there, and this is something that we've actually talked about on your podcast, was it all comes down to authenticity, right? And so if that authenticity is there and it's a true, genuine fit, it is pretty effortless because there aren't a lot of roadblocks because it just makes good business sense. So that was a really fun conversation today, and I hope that everybody walks away understanding a little bit better about how these deals are made and come about. But join us next time. We're going to be speaking with tournament director Steve Gent from the PGA Tour working at Sanderson Farms, so we can dig a little bit deeper on the tournament side of golf. So this is The Business of Golf.